are listening to the Stumptown Trade Review, your online resource for independent trades and graphic novels. And today we are going to be reviewing Five Fists of Science by Matt Fraction and Steven Sanders. And so this is a reissue of a story. I don't even know when this was originally produced, but it was quite a while ago, and it was reissued, came out in a trade paperback form. And so that's kind of why we decided to review it.
Yeah, this has been out of print for a while now, and it's kind of the book that put Fraction on the radar. And so, you know, to be able to get our hands on it now in a form that's available to everybody is pretty cool.
Yeah. And so this takes a story of Mark Twain and Nikola Tesla and turns them into crime fighters. And they're battling against Marconi and Edison and Carnegie and J.P. Morgan, and who are the play the evil side of this. And so it's just a mashup of all of the leading industry players of the late 19th century or the 20th century.
Right, and so it's kind of got that League of Extraordinary Gentlemen vibe in it, where it's characters who you're familiar with in one vein acting in an entirely new and different way.
Sure,
except still remaining true to themselves.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen were fictional characters, right, where these were actual people.
These were actual people. And you know, I think that there was a really interesting note in here at the beginning as you're reading all the character profiles that really, for the most part, character-wise, all of these characters are true to form. I mean, yes, they twisted and tweaked as needed. I mean, there's no evidence that J.P. Morgan was involved in the dark arts or anything like that. Yeah. But when it comes to their actual characterization and personalities and how they would have interacted, they did try to stay very true to the characters themselves. You know, so just all these different things that, you know, like you said, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, they were fictional characters and these are real characters. They are real characters, but in the same way, they kind of take on that larger-than-life, almost fictional element. Yeah. I mean, Mark Twain specifically was, you know, quite the character in real life.
Yeah, so how did you feel about them kind of taking real-life people and and twisting them into this kind of fictional realm?
See, for me, I didn't really have a problem with it because we've gotten so far away from these people now in real life. I mean, Twain has, you know, been dead almost 100 years now. I mean, he died in 1910. You know, we've gotten to a point where these characters, for most of us, exist only in story, exist only in the history books. The same way that the characters in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen exist. They only exist in story for us. I mean, we're getting to the point, even then, Twain died before my grandfather was born. So we're talking in the time of my great-grandfather, even. So these are, like I said, these are basically people who only exist in a book for me. And so as such, I know them as basically caricatures of themselves. I mean, I know Edison as the quote-unquote wizard of Menlo Park, who, you know, would stay up 20 hours, you know, a day working on his inventions.
Yeah.
You know, so I know them as these sort of one-line character bios, and the real person I have no context for. So for me, it really wasn't a big deal to take this one-line character, basically, and expand them into something new and different.
Yeah, I didn't really have a problem with it either for the same reason. I guess my biggest problem is that I don't like Mark Twain at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like Nikola Tesla quite a bit, so it was this weird juxtaposition for me. And I felt like Matt Fraction really captured Mark Twain's personality, at least in his little quips and stuff like that, because I absolutely hated Mark Twain in this book as well. And so it stayed pretty true to form from all of the quotes mm-hmm. that I've heard and the different stories that you right. hear about Mark Twain's life.
And I thought actually that Fraction did a good job with Twain of showing some restraint. It's very easy to take Twain and cast him as basically a Foghorn Leghorn type character. You yeah. know, I say so. I mean, that kind of thing. And you're right. I mean, Twain was supposed to be, you know, a pompous ass in this book, and Fraction did a great job of that without just blowing him so out of proportion that you couldn't understand how anyone would get along with him. I mean, he definitely grated on and irritated everybody that he was around, mm-hmm. and people who were his quote-unquote friends, it was more like they tolerated him as opposed to they really liked him.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a really great characterization of him. Again, showing some restraint.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting how they cast Tesla against Edison in this, in that, you know, Tesla and Edison have that kind of historical connection.
Yeah, as adversaries.
Right.
Very much so. And... I mean, yeah, they were high adversaries, you know, in their inventions, and they had a lot of conflicts mm-hmm. in real life. So it was interesting that Nikola is portrayed as the good guy, whereas Edison is portrayed as the bad guy
right.
in this as well.
Yeah, there was no moral ambiguity in this. There were no
it's characters. Black and white.
Yeah, this is a melodrama. This mm-hmm. is... You know, this is a steampunk Saturday afternoon matinee. I mean, the good guys have the white hats, the bad guys have the black hats. You know, there is no
like you said, J.P. Morgan and Carnegie, they're all involved in the dark arts, and they're raising these demons that are really H.P. Lovecraft-esque, you know.
Right.
And so... I mean, it's completely fictionalized.
Right. And, you know, and I think that Fraction had some fun with that. I mean, like I said, Fraction took the idea of Edison being the Wizard of Menlo Park and really took that and ran with it. You mm-hmm. know, how is it that this guy ended up with so many patents to his name? How is it all this? And he does do a good job of drawing... Again, in this first part where it's just introducing the characters, drawing the lines between how interconnected all these lives were, how, you know, this person funded this person that was involved in this project yeah. here that had this, which came back to the first person. And, you know, if you take that and you sort of parlay it into this idea of wizardship and inner circles and, you yeah. know, secret handshakes, then, yeah, you can see how... someone could easily extrapolate it and then throw in this element of magic versus science, because that's what this really was all about, that, you know, the good guys were pure science. It was very fantastic science, but it was pure science.
Sure.
You know, and again, in a very steampunk...
Fictional science, yeah.
In a very steampunk, you know, all the gauges and whistles and gears are exposed type thing, versus the you know, dark art virgin sacrifice mm-hmm. You know, of this other opposing force. What I thought was so wonderful was and I can see why this book put Fraction on the map, you know, because how these two forces come together into direct conflict happens because the evil bad guys are making assumptions that the good guys are smarter than they are. The bad guys assume that the good guys, that Tesla and Twain, are onto their evil schemes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Tesla and Twain are just kind of bumbling into it. They have a whole different idea going on.
No, really, they're just trying to make money.
They're just trying to make money. And because what they're doing could potentially, in a tangential way, threaten the evil machinations, then the bad guys are forced to reveal their hand. And the way that all plays out in plot and pacing and dialogue, really, I mean, there is no better bang for your buck than that whole scene when it just gets revealed where the bad guys realize, oh no, we've just explained everything and they had no clue that we were up to anything.
Yeah, I didn't really see it as brilliant as all that. I really felt that this was a very muddy plot and really a muddy visual narrative. There were parts in this book where I scoured the art and the pages trying to figure out what was happening and I couldn't decipher it. I turned to my wife and I was like, can you figure this out? Like, this first 2-3 page that has the action in the alleyway. And I could not, I still don't know exactly what was happening in this action sequence. And I felt like that carried out throughout the whole book for me. Like, I could not stand the visual narrative in this book. And it really threw everything else off for me. And I felt that a lot of the plot points were absolutely ridiculous. Like, there's this whole Astro City parallel where they dream up this demon, this electrical demon that they're controlling, and then their giant robot battles it. And everybody's like, oh, they saved the day. And it's completely obvious Mark Twain is running around, like, you know, saluting and cheerleading for the robot and how technology is saving everybody. Where's the government? Meanwhile, he's like, everybody knows publicly that he's partnered with Nikola Tesla with this machine. Mm-hmm. And so I just could not believe that they even tried to pull that off.
See, and I thought that was absolutely wonderful and brilliant because it was so audacious. It was so crazy. It was the exact kind of thing that I could have seen Twain doing. Twain, you know, being the salesman of it all and, you know, running around almost like, what is it, Dr. Henry Higgins in the Music Man, where he's running around trying to convince everybody that there's trouble in River City with a capital T and that what's going to solve it is a band, and he just happens to be a band salesman. You know, he just happens to sell band instruments. And I got the same kind of feeling with this that, you know, because that's what Twain says. It's like, you do the science and I'll do the sales. And he dreams up this just crazy plan. And then you're right. He runs around and he's in the crowd. And I think at one point in time he does have a megaphone or something. Yes, and he's yelling, you know, hooray for science and all ridiculous. These things. Yeah, it is completely ridiculous and over the top.
And I it drew me out of it. And
Really?
I just couldn't buy into anything like the giant robot, the giant demon, electrical demon that they're that they create. Everything about this book was so contrived to me, and just with the muddy art included, like, I absolutely despise this book. I couldn't get through it in the end. I was just like kind of rushing through the end of it because I was so completely and thoroughly done with this book. Like, there was, like, no character development beyond Twain. No. Like, Nikola Tesla was quirky.
Yeah.
That's it. The woman was a woman.
Yeah.
Edison and everybody else were just the same evil person in a ring of people. Except for Marconi, who had this weird stress-eating habit. And everything else, like, there was no characterization. Everything was focused on Mark Twain, and I absolutely hated it.
Yeah, I agree with you that the art in this was bad. And I'll chalk 45% of it up to the coloring. You know, I've said it once, I've said it 100 times. Just because it takes place in a dark alley doesn't mean it has to be so dark that we, the reader, can't see what's happening.
Yeah.
55% of it, though, I stick squarely on the choice of pictures, which pictures were chosen to
panel show. Layout horrible.
I mean, you talked about the opening scene in the alley. It took me two tries reading that scene to figure out what it is. You jump ahead about 3 or 4 pages, and while Tesla and his sidekick are walking away from the scene of the crime, and the sidekick is carrying this heavy, heavy bag of equipment, and the fourth panel down, the bag somehow comes off of the mm-hmm. sidekick's shoulder. Panel 5 has Tesla and the boys squatting down, picking up the pieces. Panel 6 is a worm's eye view looking up at Tesla. Tesla saying gasp as he reaches forward. You turn the page.
A wig or something.
And it says, I'm not touching that dreadful thing. But we have no idea where this wig came from, what it has to do. And then he says something about, you know, I would make you a better prosthetic. I'm sorry, that was on back on the fifth panel on that first page I was talking about. If I had half the mind I claim to have, I'd design you a half-decent prosthetic. We have no idea what this prosthetic is, how it comes into
play. It wasn't introduced before that.
It doesn't seem to have anything to do with why the bag fell, or at least there's nothing in the art
yes.
that indicates why the bag fell. And that's what I'm talking about, that it clearly is meant to be a plot point, because there's a reason why it's called the Five Fists of Science.
Yeah.
It's Tesla, Twain, and then this sidekick, who apparently only has one hand.
Yes.
But we never see that on panel. And I think that's what was intended here.
It was poorly done.
But it was poorly executed. And then, yeah, the art in a lot of places is just too dark to figure out what is going on. And they could have chosen a much better lighting scheme for this. They could have used, you know, gas lamps, you know, to point out the fact that Edison's electric lights still were not, you know, everywhere the way they are today. I mean, yeah. The electric light bulb is ubiquitous now, but to have it, you know, casting everything in an eerie kind of, you know, yellowish glow from that would have been a much better choice than leaving everything so dark that the reader can't figure out what it is. You can get some great visual perspective and mood using something other than black.
Yeah, and from panel to panel, it was so choppy. It did not, your eye didn't naturally flow through the page. Like, it was choppy, mm-hmm. and you were, like, always jilted and trying to figure out what our bearing was.
Right, well, and I'm looking at a page, I don't know, just over halfway through, where it's a whole, I mean, it takes place at night. It's a whole bunch of black, and then the panel breaks. The gutters are black.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to tell. It's a little disjointing as you're reading to read through it and not know. And the panels are all different sizes, which is, I mean, that's proper storytelling technique, is to use different size panels.
Yeah.
But there's no telling where the panel breaks are, because they're
the black. Bleed is black.
Yeah. Everything's black.
Yeah.
And so you're right. It gets jarring. You're realizing that your eye has tracked it one way, but your mind has tracked it an entirely different way.
Yeah.
And then you said you didn't even really get to the end. I mean, that's where
I finished the book.
I mean, you found it, but I mean, you're kind of flipping through.
At the end, I was just like, come on. It was such a poorly executed book that I was having trouble finishing.
See, and I think you just nailed it. The, you know, execution, and then the fact that there was no character development. Clearly, you know, they were all sitting around having a few beers one night and said, man, wouldn't it be awesome if you could get Tesla and Edison to go head-to-head? And they're like, oh, well, how about we throw in this person? So they got their cast together.
Yeah.
And then, all right, what's it going to be? Well, we've got to have this sort of science versus magic thing going on. And so they had all this really, really great stuff. And you can see where the ideas kind of petered out, because, man, that end of the third act, it just starts to crumble with the reveals. And, you know, once the plan is fully in motion, there's this great big scene, I mean, full page, where the skyscraper that's supposed to be the antenna is all lit up and there's demons everywhere. But you're still not quite sure what's really going on, and, you know, there's all these weird things.
I still don't understand how it concluded and how them destroying the antenna or whatever it was of that building, how that solved everything. There was no resolution in my mind as a reader.
Well, I think that as far as the plot point goes, that building was designed to be an antenna.
Yeah, tuned into the frequency
of the demon world.
Yeah.
And that by destroying the antenna,
so
they were not able to summon the master demon or whatever it is.
Okay, I got that, but there's still like thousands of demons in New York City.
Right, and plus all these little demon pods that have popped up everywhere.
And there's no explanation. Oh, so destroying the building sent everything back as well, you know? Right. It's just like, next page, everything's awesome.
Right. No, I agree. And then the conclusion where the dynamo is totally disassembled and everything is packed away and forgotten, very Raiders of the Lost Ark style, just didn't ring true at all.
Yeah.
And so I really felt like this had, you know, like I said, half, almost three quarters of a decent story, and it just crumbles, especially it's before like, that. There's no good
reference. Raiders of the Lost Ark was an isolated incident where nobody knew about that happening. This is in the middle of New York City with a giant robot and demons.
Right.
Like, you can't just disassemble it and pretend that there was never this.
Well, and especially when you have on the top of the page the newspaper article about it.
So yeah.
Clearly, you know, the internal logic doesn't even hold up in this story. And
I didn't understand why they were considered frauds.
Yeah. I mean,
it didn't really make sense. So there's a demon invasion. They blow up a building. That isn't an explanation. And then the demons apparently leave afterwards. That isn't an explanation for them blowing up the building.
Yeah.
I guess it was not clearly laid out how this book ended. This ending was just terrible.
Well, and like I said, I mean, it really just reeks of, we had this really great idea for the characters and the setup, and I guess we kind of need to end it at some point in time. I mean, it's not like this was designed to be an ongoing series, but I don't see how the story has a logical conclusion here. And that's the thing, is that it even says, you know, I mean, it has everyone's death dates in here, you know, in the first part. You know, so like I said, it's not like this even ends. I mean, there isn't even a conclusion here about, you know, how everybody gets up and walks away from this.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so it's that kind of thing where I just felt like...
And I agree. I think it's a cool idea. Even though I can't stand Twain as a person, either fictional or the real person, from what I know about him, I still thought that this was a cool idea, because I really am into Tesla. And I think that that's a really cool idea. And it's really cool that the adversaries are Edison and Marconi and the captains of industry at the time, J.P. Morgan and Carnegie. I thought that that was a really cool idea. I was ready to really buy into this.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the start with that action sequence, and then the continuation throughout, and then the ending. Oh, man. The ending was an absolute disaster.
It was. And, you know, and maybe that's why Fraction is doing so well in... you know, mainstream comics right now. Because, I mean, really, the highlight of this book was the dialogue. I mean, the interaction between the characters, for me, was the highlight of this book. And like I said, how things... There were certain plot points that, like I said, I enjoyed tremendously. In a serial nature book, such as, you know,
Invincible Iron Man.
Or Iron Man or whatever, where nothing ever really gets resolved.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we'll just have this plot point take over.
Yeah.
I could see how he would be really successful. That you know, that you don't really have to end the story. And I think that's what I said.
Well, I'm sure that...
It just had to... It just... you know, like I said, you got good characters, you got him interacting, and, you know, you let the rest
I'm sure that by now, you know, he's developed skills to creating endings and stuff. Right. I mean, this was his first book, wasn't it?
I'm not sure if it was his first, but this was his first really, I mean, main, you know, wow, this guy's got something to him type deal.
So I'm sure that he has gotten better since then. I really haven't read anything because he jumped pretty quickly to Marvel.
Right.
And I don't really dabble in the Marvel realm.
Yeah, anymore. I mean, I read his stuff on Iron Fist, which was quite good. I mean, the stuff on Iron Fist was quite good. you know, picked up a little bit of Iron Man, which was good. But like I said, it's the characterization, you know, the interaction between the characters. And again, you know, like this, it's not that you're really doing a lot of character development. You're kind of working with established characters and moving them through their paces. And that's what I really felt like was happening here. It was characters moving through their paces. And that was the thing, is that, you know, you can take this book and show how good League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is.
Really?
In comparison, because this is someone who's attempting to do a very similar thing.
Yeah.
And it is not nearly as successful, not nearly as satisfying as League was.
Definitely. Even, it's really more impressive to me because he released the newest, like, small prestige edition with all new characters. And I felt like there was more character development in that than in this.
Right.
And it just shows you, you know, the level of craftsmanship difference there.
Right. Right. And, you know, and I could see Fraction coming back at some point in time and revisiting this. I mean, like I said, there is, I mean, clearly, you know, there's more to this. I mean, Tesla didn't die. Twain didn't die. I mean, nobody's dead. They all continue to go on and work and do other things. And I could see him revisiting these characters.
I think that I would probably come back knowing that he has gotten a lot more experience and could probably write a tighter book now. Mm-hmm. I think that I would, because I like the idea and I'm willing to give it another shot, knowing that he has really been honing his craft since then. So I think that if he came back and revisited this world, I'd join.
See, I would pay good money to have a Mark Twain, Nikola Tesla road trip comic where they work their way across the country, you know, Scooby-Doo style, solving mysteries along the way, you know, using Tesla's scientific know-how and Twain's mind and gift of the gab to get people to talk.
I don't know if I can go for that.
They could ride cross country on the rails on the Transcontinental Railroad, and they can meet different historical figures along the way.
I think you've got yourself a pitch.
There we go. Fraction, if you're listening, call me. We'll make this happen.
So what did you think about the price for this? Was $13.
You know, if I would have enjoyed it more, I think that $13 for roughly 5 issues worth of content, full color, high gloss pages, a little bit of back matter, a nice introduction, I think it's a fair price point. The problem is that I didn't enjoy the book $13 worth.
No, definitely not.
You know, if I were to find this in the 50% bin, you know, you go to your local convention and there's always somebody selling half price graphic novels, I think it's $6, $6.50. It's an enjoyable read.
For me, I had a lot more problems with it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that I would pick it up for half price. Maybe quarter.
Yeah, but you know, again, also, I think though that it's important. I think that this was a sound business decision on Image's part, that it's been out of print so long that it was something that was completely inaccessible.
I agree. I mean, I had always heard about it and was never there when it came out. And so I was really ready to jump on this and take a look through it. I was interested in the idea, so.
I think that having, you know, going to this model of, you know, making sure that books stay in print. I know that Warren Ellis with his Apparat line has really pushed to have those books always in print. It's something that's always available. And, you know, as we move to a digital age and then print on demand, I think it's going to be easier and easier and more economical for people to get their hands on these kinds of stories, which is important because, like you said, it's something that you were interested in and always wanted to read,
mm-hmm.
but not having it available, not having access to it.
Yeah.
You know, basically Image was leaving money on the table.
Oh, definitely. I mean, because I probably could have BitTorrented it if mm-hmm. I really wanted to read it and I couldn't get my hands on it. And then knowing that it wasn't as good as I was hoping it would be and not have bought this.
Right.
But because this came out, I gave them my $13 and...
Right, and now Thor's going to post his on Amazon pretty yeah. soon, and you can pick yours up for less than $13.
Well, you have been listening to Stumptown Trade Review, your online resource for independent trades and graphic novels. Thanks for listening.